Welcome to Spark Your Fire Podcast. Content discussed on this podcast is general in nature. Please seek specific advice from qualified professionals. Now, let's start with the quote of the week.
See, if you're always winning and you don't really understand what it is to win, you got to take those losses. You got to take those hits. There's got to be the valleys, the peaks, the ups, the downs. In order for you to, when it does happen, you go, wow, qué rico. You know, this is what it's all about. And not only that, it's never about making it, guys. It's always about maintaining it. That's the toughest part.
Welcome back to an episode of Spark Your Fire, ladies and gentlemen. We are kicking off 2021 with some exciting property episodes back again. And just to start off for the year, we've got Kate Beckos back on the show with us to give everyone a quick Melbourne update. But before that, I want to make sure my partner in crime, Jazz, doesn't feel too left out, because he always say that I do. put too much of the spotlight on our guests and keep forgetting the guy that's working hard in the background. Jazz, how are you doing?
Really good, mate. I fully understand. You can forget me today. It's Kate. Her beautiful face. She takes over the show. So
not on purpose, mate. Let me tell you. Well, especially when you're on a planet and you just don't seem to be coming back anytime soon. So that's part of the problem.
I like to see world from a 40,000 view.
That's fantastic. And we've got Kate here as well, coming back to our show again. Kate, how are you doing today?
I'm great. I'm so pleased to be asked to come back onto your show. You guys had a memorable show with me last time. It was the first time on a podcast where I was popped on the spot to talk about aliens and religion. So I'm ready for anything today.
Jazz has got a whole new set of those today again.
I love it.
It's 2021, new set of questions.
Yeah. No PC. I just thought it was great.
But anyways, thanks for jumping on, Kate. David and I were talking about, we normally at the start of the year go through property rounds, different states, talking about what's happening in the market, especially with property being so hot currently right at the start of the year, where rather than going in a slow motion towards the boom territory, it almost feels like we are already there. There's a word being used again and again, which is boom. And whether you speak to the real estate agents or the pros like you who are in the market. So it'll be good if you give us your take on what's currently happening in the Victoria, Melbourne market and what the year looks like for the people who are planning to either buy their first home and investments. This podcast is focused a lot on investments, but we'll try and cover both in time if we can. So over to you on what's going on in the market currently.
Wow, what a pivot we've had. What is going on in the market is probably the hardest, fastest amount of rush and pressure and FOMO, dare I say it, and what we've had in a long time. I've been a buyer's agent for over 10 years and I worked close to the industry as a mortgage broker throughout the GFC. And at the time, I was a buyer myself. I was still on my investment acquisition journey. And I remember how it felt when the GFC came to a head. And at the time, Kevin Rudd put a lot of stimulus out there and we had interest rates drop as well. Our RBA responded pretty quickly. And that was our best attempt to avoid a recession. And what we did, aside from other economic wins, is we stimulated our property market. And I remember Melbourne in 2009 did over 20%, which is an enormous, enormous amount of growth for one city. And it felt very, it felt a lot like now, except it pales in comparison to now. And anyone who's out there looking for property, I know that it's not restricted to Melbourne. I've seen on chat groups and I've talked to industry colleagues, it's happening almost everywhere. Try and buy a house in Perth right now. Even Darwin's having, they're experiencing changed conditions and they've got more buyers than sellers. So it's difficult across the board and it's not just capital cities. In fact, I'd argue that the regions that are within driving distance to our capital cities are really feeling the heat. So if I contrast it to post-GFC, this feels more severe. And the reason for that is we've had stimulation to our economy. We've had incentives and initiatives going out there. We've also had a drop in interest rates at a time when no one wanted to buy. So it's a little bit akin to steering a ship when you decide to pivot and do a U-turn, it doesn't happen overnight. So if you're turning on the wheel really, really hard, eventually the ship might oversteer. And I feel that's what's happened. We've had these interest rate drops and everyone was sitting on their hands in early 2020. And then when we had it again in November, it was still too early to tell how the previous rate cut had filtered through, because we, our doors in Melbourne had only just opened. We were literally sitting in our houses on Zoom for 3 months, not running businesses. It was very difficult. Mm-hmm. So now we've had a significant interest rate cut. And if you look at interest rates on offer now and the differential between now and a couple of years ago, that's a serious percentage. And it's filtered through into borrowing capacity. And, of course, you've seen consumer sentiment has pivoted as well, because the journos aren't talking about 30% drops anymore and people are seeing how Australia's navigated COVID so far. So we've got increased sentiment, we've got lots of FOMO and we've got cheap money.
Mm-hmm. And is that increase in sentiment leading to increase in prices as well, fair bit?
Absolutely, or? Yeah. And we say recorded data. And that's CoreLogic data, or whichever data house it comes from. That's not the only channel, but it's the main one. And we all know that the data that comes out from CoreLogic isn't necessarily up to the minute data, because the properties generally have to settle for that data to be recorded. So if you've got an average settlement period of 60 to 90 days, that's how long it takes to filter through. And so we're looking at claims of a market turnaround and single-digit growth. For me, at the coalface, dare I say it, for houses, not for apartments, it does feel like we've done close to 10% since the gates opened. And if that continues, this could be a 20% a year as well.
20% a year. Wow.
Yeah.
It's funny you mentioned Perth and Darwin, because David, I and John, we do our weekly wrap and we discussed how we've been talking about Perth market since last year because of the commodities boom that's happening. And Perth is all commodities, so there's no surprise over there. Yeah. The surprise was going to be in the Victorian market. Now, there's some of the articles out there on Domain and other websites where you read that people are flocking away from CBD into the regional and the C areas. Are you seeing the demand increasing and the price increasing? Price increases more segregated in a way where it's more increasing towards the regional towns and the outer sea change areas, or?
Very much so. And in September, October, all of my inquiry, no, I shouldn't say all, over 60% of my inquiry was tree change, sea change, because at that stage, you know, Melbourne just really smelled bad. None of us wanted to be in Melbourne because we were in lockdown and the regions had a lot more freedom than we did. They came out of lockdown quicker and it was a real us and them. And we were working from home. Some of us had insufficient workspace areas and we were just craving studies that, you know, weren't in the same room as our kids and partners. And so that was rife. And yes, I've seen the prices absolutely skyrocket in all of the regions within 2 hours distance of Melbourne. And unfortunately, you know, humans sometimes all follow suit. All of my inquiry is around find me a property that's got XYZ and it's within 2 hours drive of Melbourne. So, of course, everyone that's thinking of this is all looking at the same product and it's pushed prices up, no doubt. Mm-hmm. And it's very difficult to compete in these markets. And the sign of that difficulty is the tight days on market and the restricted time that we have to do our due diligence and to put forward an offer. And of course, when agents cotton onto this, they love adopting the process of best and highest, which means you've got one chance, one hit, you can throw in your best and highest offer and we're not coming back to you and the best one wins and the vendor will pick it. Mm-hmm. That can be really difficult for people, and all you need to do is miss out on a few and you might start thinking irrationally and emotionally and pay too much. It's a really challenging way of doing business and it's not one that I enjoy at all. And we've seen it work really well for some vendors, but it can be a bit of a danger as well. When you're looking at offers that might be conditional, you tend to find that there's a chance that buyers who are deemed successful might change their mind or their finance might not come through. So there are challenges all around, but right now that one is a serious one.
Mm-hmm. It's interesting. I don't know whether, David, you have noticed or not, and even Kate, but I live in outer burbs of Melbourne, southeast side. And what I've noticed is just start of this year when the schools open back, driving kids to school, it's taking me an extra 20 minutes now. It almost feels like that it's a lot of the people from the city areas are moving this way and the traffic has just gone up. Also, speaking to some of the real estate agents locally, they are talking about how they are having 100 people on an open house within the area, which was very surprising to me. So maybe a silly indicator to look at, but traffic just tells me that there's people moving towards this area and the freeway extensions and all that stuff.
Very much so. We've seen a real shift in number of bedrooms on search lists and criteria lists. Mm-hmm. Everyone has effectively added one or two bedrooms to their list, and that's a really compelling change and something that will require and will have a lasting effect of, you know, change in our marketplace.
Kate, can I ask you, I'd like to know, whilst we're on the topic of sea change and tree change, I actually like to ask for your opinion in terms of what you think, whether this is going to be a longer term trend, or do you still think that, I guess, after the vaccines being rolled out, people's confidence come back and, you know, the New South Wales government have been attempted to try to get people back into the CBD. And I'm sure that the Victoria Premier will be doing that at some point in time too.
Yeah.
Do you think that this is only going to be a short spurt of growth for regional areas, or do you expect to see that this is going to be a longer-term trend?
I love this question. You know, in materials engineering terms, is it a plastic or an elastic change? Like anything that changes our values and changes our way of life, some things bounce back and some things stick and stay forever and reshape us. I think what will reshape us is our ability to work remotely. You know, for someone like me, dealing with tech was my biggest fear. And for others, it was having to homeschool. But I can now deal with tech in so many ways and I'm so much better at it than what I was. Can I work remotely? Absolutely. Would I like to? I'd love a hybrid arrangement. I don't want a full-time get rid of the office and move to the country arrangement at all. So I think that we'll see a lot of people who have permanently changed how they're prepared to work. We'll see a lot of bosses that have permanently altered the way in which they'd like their teams to be able to work. But what I don't think is permanent is Melbourne being on the nose or the cities being on the nose. Not everyone is suited to the tree change or the escape to the country. It's beautiful if you can choose both, but not everybody has the funds to do so. So if it's one or the other, we will see a lot of people miss the city or find that they need to work in the city, whether it be that their office setup is more contingent to how they have to work or whether they just miss their workplace and the buzz of the bars or whatever it is. We've got to look at education, hospitals, and there are some fantastic schools and hospitals in regional centres, but there are plenty of cheap regions that have insufficient healthcare and education standards. So we do have to keep that in mind. I think it's a little bit of a fad and a little bit of a permanent change all rolled into one.
So 20% increase this year in prices, Kate, and we have discussed that number on our pod as well. We believe some of it being 10 to 20% kind of thing, more 15 to 20. The average price house in Victoria already sits somewhere between $600,000 to $700,000, right? Add another 20% on that, you're talking about a $140,000, $150,000 deposit straight away, cash deposit that's required, right?
Yes.
Average salaries haven't gone up in the last year or two. In fact, if anything, people have lost their jobs, right?
Yes.
How do you see this market sustaining itself over the next, in this property cycle that we are in, just at the start of it? How do you see the property prices sustaining itself once the run is over? Especially, yeah. I don't know whether you read the article or not, but yesterday or the day before, there was an article out there which talked about New Zealand already trying to put restriction on their lending.
Yeah, yeah. They put 60% LVR caps on their investors. But this is a really good question, and honestly, I answer it every day. And what I want the listeners to hear is this is Kate Bakos's opinion. And I read a lot, ask a lot, but I'm not an economist and I don't know a single economist that's got all of their predictions right as well. I know a few that have come close, but the question around how sustainable this is a good one. Now, we don't have wages growth, certainly not at the same pace as what we've got housing price growth. And we don't have new arrivals. And for Melbourne, that's been an enormous part of our property growth story. What we do have, though, is increased borrowing capacity. We've had interest rate cut after interest rate cut. And as an example, 2 years ago, someone who could borrow $5,000 with the same repayment schedule, monthly P&I repayment schedule, can now borrow well over $650. That's significant. And when people can borrow and need to borrow in the face of competition, they will borrow. So we can't reduce our interest rates any further. That's a given. What we did see COVID do was forced a lot of households to save. And your point, Jazz, about unemployment is a really good one. Unemployment did go up. And we will live with that for a while now because a lot of jobs have been hurt either permanently or for too long for that to be easily survivable by that person. They'll probably pivot and do something else. But what we do know is that anyone who's on JobKeeper or JobSeeker is probably not buying a property right now. The people that are buying properties are employed and they've got the confidence. Whatever the reason is, they've got personal confidence to say, I believe this is the right time for me to do it right now. Now, if we have changes to our responsible lending guidelines, which has been on the cards for a long time and March is the month, they're talking of easing the guidelines. And what that means is that while we have cheap money and when you can get your hands on it, your borrowing capacity is higher, it's still really hard to get money. A lot of people are jumping through hoops. You guys know this way more than me. The lenders are still really tough and they're scrutinising lots of deals that aren't what we know as vanilla, meaning, you know, they've got PAYG income and their credit report is really clean and their spending habits are visible and perfect, and everything that we classify as vanilla is basically going through. Not necessarily quickly, though. Lenders are still taking a while. But if we ease the responsible lending guidelines and credit assessors start to have less of a reliance to scrutinise everything and if policy changes to reflect that, we'll see more people being able to borrow. Now, also overlay the fact that investors now with cheaper interest rates are finding that their out-of-pocket cash flow is reduced and some properties cash flow positive. That's a bit of an impetus for investors to say, hang on a sec, property isn't a bad asset class right now, let's jump back in. Mm-hmm. So that's why I think for the next 2 years at the very least, we'll continue to see an increase in asset prices because we have more people jumping on board.
Mm-hmm. So what are your top five picks for Victorian market based on the trends that you're seeing, the type of investors that you're dealing with, homeowners? What are your favorite picks from a investor's perspective, more of without disclosing your secret recipe?
Mm-hmm. I don't mind sharing some gold with you guys. I know the regions have been performing really well. That's not a reason to jump on and do it, by the way. Just because everyone else is doing it, it doesn't mean that you should do it. Geelong, however, is a favourite of mine, and I don't think it's just a COVID spurt. Geelong was showing a lot of promise before COVID hit, and it's really changed from – it's had a bit of a renaissance. It was always an industrial city. It had the pyramid collapse. It then had the Ford plant closure. A lot of people looked at it with, you know, sad face and thought that Geelong – would take a long time to recover, and what it's done is had a face change, and it's now with working from home, we've seen even more Melburnian professionals, entrepreneurs, trades move to Geelong and say, this is a great city to live in and raise my kids in. Mm-hmm. Getting to Geelong on a train, you might be standing up, but it's still a pretty fast journey. They're putting mm-hmm. on more services. They've done a lot of track works. Geelong is something I look at and marvel at, because if I look at Sydney and contrast it, you've got Wollongong, you've got Newcastle, you've got the Central Coast, and they're further from Sydney than Geelong is from Melbourne. And those areas had some really impressive growth when the affordability equation started to hit the papers in New South Wales. So well, Geelong is definitely a bit of a fave of mine. That's one. I've got four to go.
David's pretty happy. I can already tell you.
Yeah, I do have one property in Geelong, and was bought about 3 years ago. So enjoying good growth there. But
what street? Can you tell us what street?
I can tell it's in Newcombe. basically.
Good work. Okay. So, well, yeah, that's the gentrification story is massive in Newcombe, and I've had some activity there myself.
Maybe give me the house number as well, David.
While we're at it, eh?
That's very cool.
In terms of Geelong, though, are there any specific suburbs that you would say it's good for value at the moment? What would you say for any kind of investors wanting to get into that market?
Yeah, happy to throw out some price points. Look, I'm still cautious about Corio and Noor Lane, and everyone that's asked me on the record, I haven't bought ever in Corio and Noor Lane. At this stage, I don't want to. And it's a more challenging area, socio-demographic reasons, and a good property manager will give you their best advice and thoughts on a particular street or area when you ask them. It doesn't mean that there aren't other areas that have the same issues. In fact, I'm very cautious when I'm floating around Newcombe, Whittington, Thompson, because there are some streets I'm not so excited about, sure, but there are some streets that are great. I think that Grovedale is a bit of a nice little keeper, and the demographic there is pretty gentle, very, you know, mum and dad and family friendly. It's a large suburb. It's got the benefit of being reasonably close to a train station where if you're a commuter, you might get a seat because it's at the start of the journey if you're heading into the city. And there are lots of brick veneer houses around Grovedale that don't tend to prove to be too much of a hassle when it comes to building inspection reports and maintenance issues. And they do themselves justice when they're renovated because they generally have pretty good floor plans and you can build on a deck or do whatever it needs. You'll need permits, by the way. But, yes, to do those things, you can add a bit of value if you're into that kind of thing. I'm a huge supporter of Rippleside and Drumcondra Market, and they're my favourite suburbs in Geelong, and I think they're the best kept secrets because they're on the water. You can meander down little paths and walk along the waterfront into the city. You've got Eastern Beach. It's a pretty amazing spot. And North Geelong Station is an easy walk from Rippleside and you can quickly jump on a train.
What sort of price range of Rippleside now? I remember looking at it before. It was already pretty expensive though.
Yeah.
Probably 500, 600 mark.
You won't get a house for 500.
Yeah, you won't get a house now. Yeah, there you go.
You'll need. There's a single front going to auction soon. I'm circling early eights for that one. So
yeah, wow.
It's a generously sized single front, but it's a single front nonetheless, and there aren't many units in Rippleside, so you really do need a house budget if you're going there.
Gotcha. Okay. Wow. No, that's good, impressive. I know I've seen Grovedale before. I've seen it from a 300k suburb to now jumping over to 400k suburb, and I reckon it's still trending higher as well, so I totally agree with you.
Someone just paid over 700 for one in Grovedale. Oof, the agent said to me, I really wanted to take this to market. And a desperate Melburnian just said, what will it take to stop the auction? And I think he basically threw out, like, you'd need to think about something starting with a seven, thinking it might have tipped cold water on them. But, no, that's what they did.
Do you reckon Belmont at the moment is still a good pick in terms of
awesome.
from investor perspective, even though the numbers wouldn't add up though, but because of the good schools and all that, from a longer term perspective, it's got the fundamentals.
Yeah. It's an evergreen. Yeah, Belmont.
It's an evergreen.
Belmont is a blue chip suburb in its own right, and you know it's a big suburb, so there are streets that are a bit more distant from the shops and the village. But if you are anywhere near the high street shops, or if you can get yourself near the Barwon River, there are some gorgeous places. I was at an auction for something that went well over $2 million, and it was a stunner. It was in Highton, but it was near the river. Yeah.
Okay. Sorry, Jazz, I'm not meant to hijack it into more of a Geelong discussion, but I think that gives our listeners a bit of tips in terms of where to look for Geelong. So, you know.
That's fine. We'll pub Geelong.
Thank you, Kate, for being so generous of sharing about
pleasure. We've got one out of five nailed. I could share another. There's another generic, group of dwelling types that I get excited about at the moment. A three-bedroom unit. If you can find an apartment or a villa unit with three real bedrooms, you've got a scarcity value there that can't be changed. So going forward, everyone who wants a three-bedroom, which right now is everyone, three or more seems to be the minimum, you've got something that is a pretty scarce product because in old-fashioned blocks of flats, you usually find that they're ones and twos. When you get a three that's proportioned nicely, that's a rarity.
So this is talking about three-bedroom apartments. Is that
or villa units? Or yeah, villa units is a very Melbourne-centric term, but they're those little nanny units in a strata block of something like 4 to 10, usually, and they've got the brick and tile look. They're usually single level, got a little courtyard at the back, and sometimes brown garages divide them all. We all know the type. It's a nanny unit. They renovate really nicely, and a lot of young people, first home buyers, gravitate to them.
Mm-hmm. It's funny actually how the 3-bedroom units, which were not that common before COVID, now all of a sudden will be fetching premium these days for the people who still want to be in an apartment or close to the city unit type accommodation. So that's interesting. I think we'll see more and more of them being built in the future with what's going on currently.
I do too. I think planning approvals and developer activity will really start to centre around more usable internal floor areas, and in particular dedicated studies, not study nooks.
Mm-hmm. Yep. So there's Geelong, there's units which will be probably closer to the city, whatever suburb you pick, inner burbs kind of thing.
What about Ballarat? I know that's also one of the areas that you're looking at, Kate, closely.
Yeah, I do shop in Ballarat. Ballarat is very, very tricky to buy in right now. I had 2 lovely clients come to Ballarat in the car with me last week, and we had 8 properties to see, and I had been building their itinerary for a few weeks, and even by Friday afternoon before we left, we had all of our properties eradicated because they're under offer or whatever. Wow. So we banked up a few more, and then on Monday I checked in with the agents and they said, under offer. So 2 remained, and we scrambled around, called all the agents and said, without even being able to see what you've just listed, can you just take us through? So it's a bit of a lucky dip because there's no photos, there's just descriptions. Anyway, I managed to get 8 properties to see on the Tuesday. So we went up, we saw 2 that I had visibility on, and then old links for the other ones. And one of the agents who had 2 off markets for me, or 2 pre-markets, said to me, you're the first one to go through this one. And the next one, you're also the first one, but I've got a handful of other buyers. So you'll have a few people going through at the same time. I said, yep, no worries. So we went through, there were lots of groups. It was a bit like a nightclub. By the time I finished my inspection and came out, she said, I've got 2 offers. They're above the acceptable range. We're going to have a bit of a boardroom auction style negotiation for this tonight. Are you in or out? Couldn't believe it. 6 offers later, it sold well above the price tag.
Mm-hmm. Ballarat normally has been a yield play in the past, paradise for cash flow investors who are looking for cash flow. Do you see that changing with this COVID situation, where the rent yields will drop and we'll see more capital appreciation?
That's a really good question. The rental yields at the moment are still in part, certainly in Victoria, in the major regional locations, when you factor in all of the outgoings, there's still a small out-of-pocket for most investors who are borrowing 105%. Now, for anyone who's rocking in the corner or falling off the chair, that's using equity to borrow. So if you've already got the equity there, you want to try and maximise how much you're borrowing so that you can maximise your tax deductions. So if you factor in everything from property management to insurances, rates, even land tax, that's a big one if you've hit your quota, you'll still be putting your hand in your pocket a little bit. And that, if you're picking something in, let's say, Rippleside or Drumcondra or Newtown or Geelong West or East Geelong, you'll definitely have your hand in your pocket because the yields are still not covering the repayments. And I don't think that will change in a hurry. Victoria has typically always had lower gross rental returns. And right now we don't have an issue with our vacancy rates, but they're not as tight as some of the regions. Geelong's got tight vacancy rates, so we can anticipate rental growth there, as is Ballarat. But Melbourne, we still have some patchy areas where we've got vacancies. So until that changes, it's vacancy rate that drives rental increase. And right now we're not seeing a dramatic shift in rental increase. I think we need to get further away from COVID personally. We've had a lot of investors a little bit stunned by the eviction moratorium, which for Victoria, or for Melbourne, lasts until the end of March. So I think it's a bit of a watch this space still.
Mm-hmm. And within the Melbourne range, 40Ks kind of radius. What suburb, from an investor's perspective, you think will outperform north, south, east, west, whichever direction?
Oh, that's a really good question. It's almost impossible to answer because areas are invigorated and move at their own pace for various reasons. So it's not just a homogenous list of reasons why property values increase. We have to look at a few things, though, that can trigger a bit of excitement. Infrastructure changes, and we've got the middle ring rail project not yet started, but that will have an impact. We've had the boom gate removal, which will mean getting around the cities a bit easier. We're also seeing the metro tunnel project now as it stands, and we've got things like the Western Distributor, which I won't go there because we've had a bit of, you know, soil and land remediation issues. But those are things that can trigger a bit of excitement. But we're also seeing some really exciting changes in the outer east and outer southeast in areas that can be sort of considered a little bit tree change and sea change as well. So I think Victoria's funding in response to COVID to stimulate the construction and building industry is already holding us in pretty good stead. And I wouldn't have imagined the pivot that our state and federal governments would do financially in response to this, but I think it's been outstanding.
Mm-hmm. Two questions. One, when do you see this bull run or the property cycle, this particular cycle, ending? I know it's going to be different for different states, but just if you were to put a blanket approach on that, or maybe mainly Melbourne and Sydney. And two, by the time the cycle ends, what's the overall growth we will see in the prices? 20%, 30%, 50%, double it?
Yeah. Well, I'm really throwing a dart at a dartboard here. I would have been more confident answering this before the pandemic hit, because our last downturn before all of this was leading into our federal election, and it was in response to almost completely a credit crunch. So our regulator, our prudential regulator, clamped down on investor activity, and then they wanted to really preserve savings in household situations. And so decreasing household debt and getting the investors to sit it out was how they went about it. And in terms of physically how they created that, it was all through lending policy, macroprudential changes, as we've talked about in New Zealand, restricting LVRs, just getting tighter with scrutiny with loan assessment and saying no to a lot of applicants that were outside of the box. So could we see that happen again? I think so. We have to be careful about not oversteering the ship. But what COVID taught us is anything can happen out of the blue that can cause our property market to wobble or come off. And no one ever would have guessed that we'd have a pandemic hit so quickly and do what it did. So I've seen events that were not able to be forecasted or not something that was top of mind for any of us before, whether it be 9/11 or you know, policy changes, but this one was out of the box. So what could stop our run? Pretty much anything. Sky's the limit. Do I think that there are some key issues that are on the horizon that could cause issues? Yeah, I think when our government and regulators fiddle with the levers and oversteer them, that's when things can get tricky. So I'm envisaging if investors do jump back in, if we do relax our responsible lending guidelines, and if asset price growth gets out of hand and they all start worrying about bubbles and protecting first home buyers again, we'll just see credit policy and lending policy change again. And if they oversteer it, it might be a credit crunch that slows things down. So anything is possible.
Mm-hmm. Interesting. I don't have many more questions regarding property, David. Do you any? Or Kate, do you want to add anything from our investors or homeowner occupiers perspective that will help them navigate these markets?
Yeah, if we look at some, anyone can download the CoreLogic reports. The free one it comes out all the time. It's great. And you can see the percentage of new loan approvals divided into refinancing, owner occupier and investor debt. And then if you go looking for first home buyer credit, you can also see those charts. So you can work out how many of the owner-occupiers are first-home buyers, et cetera. And what we've noticed over the years is that we've really got a tiny representation of investors who are borrowing and taking action right now. It's mostly all owner-occupiers, whether it be firsties, downsizers or upgraders. So we haven't got a story to tell yet for investors. I think the sky's the limit for investors, and I would say they should think about jumping in while they can. We've got stamp duty concessions on offer until the end of June. It's 25% off if you buy established, 50% off if you buy brand new. I'm not a fan of brand new, happy to go on the record for that, but the discount's there nonetheless. So I think we've got a window of opportunity before we start seeing the lenders clamping down and controlling the number of new investment loans again.
Interesting. David?
I think the Victorian markets in terms of investors, I think a lot of investors are in the market. I mean, I'm getting my investor inquiries have definitely started to pick up from the start of the year, but they're not necessarily targeting Victoria. I mean, probably primarily due to the rental yields side of reasons. They're still looking at Brisbane being a very, very hot market, and also a couple of mines looking at Perth now as well in terms of being able to pick up and take, you know, leverage off the commodity boom that's up to come for the next couple of years. So, but yeah, look, I think it's in general, it's good exposure in the sense that Victorian government certainly tried to incentivize based on the stamp duty, and they put a time limit. So you got another 4 months to go. Just out of curiosity, how much stamp concession can an investor get if they want to look into the purchasing invest in Victorian market?
Up to $1 million. So okay. any property that they buy up to $1 million, they'll get 25% off the going rate of the stamp duty if it's established.
Great.
50% of the going rate if it's brand new.
Yeah. Okay. Awesome. Well, I guess for our listeners who hasn't taken action in Victorian markets, it's probably a good opportunity to enter the market given the fact that the stamp duty there is usually very, very high. I think close to 6% of the purchase price from memory. So it'll be great to take advantage of the 25% off for existing dwellings. So,
yeah, I agree.
All right, Jess, over to you on those 2021 set questions.
For 2021, Kate, rank them in order: commodities, crypto, real estate.
Yeah, good one. Far out. That's a really nasty question. It's almost as nasty as whether I believe in God or aliens. Okay, I'll frame it, right, so that our listeners don't think I'm being a show-off. I'm rubbish at shares. Like, I'm ultra rubbish at shares. And I've gone on the record before calling Bitcoin shitcoin, and I've been proven wrong. So the natural bias in me says real estate, commodities, crypto. Mm. And the person who just does not understand in any of this says crypto could really surprise us. I've just been watching Bitcoin and shaking my head. I don't understand it. I don't recommend it. I steer clear of it, but my goodness, it's soaring. There's no way that property's done that. What I want to leave the listeners with on that account is you can't borrow 95% for the other two and you can for property. So leveraging is the powerful part.
Mm-hmm. Fair enough.
The thing about being an expert in a field is it takes a lot of hours. It's like being a pilot. You know, there's flying hours, and the same can be said for what I do. So it would be absolutely naive of me and disrespectful to just shun any other asset class just because I've chosen to focus only on property. But that is a perfect excuse, though. I have only focused on property, and I actually own no other asset classes at all in my super or anything. I only own property.
Fair enough. Which state do you think will be the winner when this cycle ends?
Yeah, I think Tasmania is going to surprise us. I don't think it's going to be the winner, but I think it's going to keep going because the things that have changed about Tasmania are multiple, and we've always looked at it and thought, GDP out of Tassie, what are we thinking? It's been, you know, supported by the mainland, but we've got a lot of money going down to Tasmania, and as our population ages, it will continue to be a draw card. There are a lot of beautiful things in Tasmania, and I think that it's got a university and great hospitals and a fantastic environment. So anyone who's conscious of bushfires, heat, rising sea levels, et cetera, there's a lot on offer there in Tasmania, and that's becoming a louder concept that people are talking about. I think if the commodities keep doing what they're doing. We expect Perth to really show us some great performance. I've always been a believer in Melbourne's stability, and once we are welcoming back international students in particular and new arrivals, long term, I do hold out a lot of hope for my city.
Mm-hmm. Interesting. Yeah, it sounds like you were listening to Spark Your Fire. We
I love your show. It's a great show.
Great minds think alike. That's part of the way.
Kid, as a person, seagull, tree gull, city gull.
As a person, seagull.
Seagull, tree gull, city gull.
Mm.
Let me take a guess. Half seagull, half city girl.
Yeah, you're bang on. I was raised in Sorrento, so I've got the beach in my veins, but I absolutely love the city. You know that movie Muriel's Wedding, mm-hmm. where she gets sick of the seaside and all she wants to do is move to the Big Smoke? That was me.
There we are.
That's pretty much all I had, Kate. I appreciate your time.
Thanks. It's been such a pleasure. You guys have lots of fun. I look forward to the next one.
But look, I appreciate your time, and we'll probably bring you back at some point as the market keeps showing us new directions and gives us some surprises on the way. But love your knowledge, love your work. So thanks for your
Thank
time.
Thank you so much. Go Newcomb.
Go Jamal.
I'll see you guys soon. Take care.
Take care.
Thanks, Kate.
See you later.